Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. This morning I shared stories about four different people, and I chose these people because I believe they all had something in common. They were all invisible people. They were people who others walked by every day and never noticed. No one ever said hi. No one said, how are you? No one ever called them sir or ma'am. They were people you didn't say excuse me to when you went by. You just bumped into them and brushed them off. They were marginalized. They were the people who were outcasts. They were people who were incredibly lonely. They were people that if they died, no one would notice. Even worse, no one would care. But Jesus did. Jesus cared. Jesus noticed. And Jesus took time to comfort and relieve them of their alienation and their loneliness. Luke told us of the bleeding woman. Now, this woman wasn't always invisible. She once probably had a family and friends, probably worked and traded food goods with the people in the community. She would be had been invited to weddings and celebrations, attended worship on the Sabbath, and laughed with the local women. But then one day she started to hemorrhage, and the bleeding wouldn't stop. And we're not told what the problem was. It could have been a myriad of things. But in those days, it was any birth defects or chronic illnesses like that were considered to be caused by sin. And therefore, not only was she considered unclean, but she was also seen as a sinner and unable to participate in worship in everyday social life. No more offerings at the temple, no more singing praises with the congregation, no more celebration, no more girl talk with the ladies at the well, no more hugs. First, people just avoided her. Don't touch her, or you'll be unclean too. They gossiped about her, speculating what sin she may have committed that would cause this. But after a while, people got tired of talking about her. They moved on to gossip about someone else, and they forgot about her. She became invisible for 12 years. But she heard about a man, a special man named Jesus, and his miraculous works. So she thought to herself, he is my only chance. If only I can touch his robe, I know I'll be healed. So weak and distressed, she forced her way through the big crowd, and it wasn't that difficult because she was invisible, right? And she stretched her arm between the people, and she found Jesus' tunic, and instantly she was healed. But to her dismay, this invisible woman was invisible no longer. Jesus stopped and he said, who touched me? And the disciples said, Lord, you're kidding, right? You're standing in a crowd of people patting you on the back, and you're talking to them, you're shaking hundreds of hands. And Jesus said, no, this was different. I felt power go out of my body. Who touched me? And knowing that she had been found out, the woman said, I did, my Lord. Have mercy. I just wanted to be healed. And Jesus gently takes her by the hand and says, daughter, go in peace. Your faith has healed you and freed you from your suffering. She was set free from her 12-year prison of condemnation, isolation, and loneliness. And she was no longer invisible. Then there was the blind man. Again, his blindness was believed to be caused by sin. On another occasion, the disciples asked Jesus about another blind man. And they asked him, who sinned, him or his parents? And Jesus answered, neither. This isn't a result of sin. This man was born blind for such a time as this, that God may be glorified and that you may see his healing and believe. So Jesus is heading in to the busy city of Jerusalem, again flocked by dozens of followers. And this blind beggar calls out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me." Again, this man is seen as a sinner. No one will give him anything or have anything to do with him. No one will feed him. No one will take him in. No one will care for him. His only option is to beg for coins, and his best opportunity to get the most charity is to sit at the busy front gates of the city. And so he would sit there every day in the hot sun begging people to give him something. And each day, hundreds, if not thousands of people would pass him by, not noticing, not caring. And after a while, to those who knew him, he became invisible. It's like a tree that topples down along the road from a storm. And at first, every time you drive by, you notice it and you point it out to other people and you talk about it. But after a while, you just drive by, never even notice, never even consciously thinking about it. It becomes invisible. But on this day, Jesus notices him. And when he cries out, the people tell him to shut up like he's just some stray barking dog. But Jesus stops. He walks over to him and softly asks, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And with tear-filled blank eyes and a trembling voice, he says, "Lord, I want you to allow me to see again." And having compassion on him, Jesus heals him and he can see. But again, Jesus set him free, not just from his blindness, but from the condemnation, the judgment, and the loneliness. I also read to you about the lame man. This man was either born lame or something happened, an accident in his life. Nevertheless, he couldn't walk, but had to crawl to wherever he needed to go. And I say that because unlike another crippled man who had friends who carried them to a house where Jesus was teaching and dug a hole through the ceiling and lowered him down so he could be healed, this man doesn't seem to have those kind of friends. Because if he did and they carried him to the pool of Bethesda, wouldn't they at least help him get in as well? In Jerusalem, there was a pool near the sheep gate. I guess shepherds took their sheep to drink there. But each day, God troubled the waters. And each day, the pool would start to bubble and agitate, and the first person who got in would be healed. This poor, invisible soul had gone to this pool for 38 years. And when God troubled the water, he'd start crawling toward the pool. Someone else would butt in front of him like he wasn't even there, like he was invisible, and steal his blessing. But on this day, out of all the people there jockeying for position, Jesus noticed him. And he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" Indicating that he did, Jesus said, "Take up your mat and walk." And immediately he was healed and set free. And then there was Zacchaeus. You may be wondering why I'm including Zacchaeus in this lesson. You might say Zacchaeus was known by a lot of people. He was a tax collector. And yes, that's true, but he was only known as a tax collector and a cheating one at that. Maybe you say it's because he was so short and often overlooked because people couldn't see him. Well, Zacchaeus, he was short. He wasn't blind, he wasn't lame or deaf, but he was short. And on this day, Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, and unable to get through the crowds or see over them, he climbs a tree. Nobody even notices him. He's invisible to the crowds until Jesus noticed him and called him down. Now the crowd sees Zacchaeus and probably can't wait to see what's going to happen. This little loudmouthed twerp who betrayed his own Jewish people and went to work for the Romans, who's been cheating them out of their hard-earned money, now he's going to get his. Jesus is going to let him have it. Maybe even send this little demon into a flock of pigs. Zacchaeus is probably even cringing as he looks up at Jesus like a dog with his tail between his legs. But Jesus smiles and says, "Relax. Go on home and prepare a meal, for tonight I'm going to eat at your place." And Zacchaeus' face, it changes from guilty and uneasy to happy. Finally, someone of prominence notices him. Finally, someone who wants to spend time with him. Finally, someone wants to come over. And that moment, that moment that Jesus self-invited himself, changes him. He repents. He repays the people four times what he's taken from them. Zacchaeus was finally set free, and set free from the stigma of his short stature. Jesus noticing him made him feel 10 feet tall. All of these people I've just told you about, they were invisible to the people around them. As a matter of fact, the first three are so invisible, we don't even know their names. Had Jesus not noticed them, the disciples would have never written about them, and nobody would know they even existed. And even though we know Zacchaeus' name, he was just like the others, condemned, isolated, and lonely. I want to share one more story with you. 3 years ago, I was an assistant scoutmaster for Ben's Boy Scout troop. And that year, when we went to scout camp, I met a young boy who was a first-year scout at camp. And he wasn't having a good time. He wanted to go home. Now, I didn't know this kid, but I talked to him, found out his name was Brandon. And I talked to him for about 10 minutes and encouraged him to stay. Now, first-year scouts were all put into a Lacusan program, and they were required to do certain skills and earn certain degree of things. And one of the things they had to complete that first year was a five-mile hike. And so having a first-year scout of our own, a tenderfoot, I volunteered to go on that hike with them. And so we met on Thursday morning, and 2 minutes into the hike, I hear this voice behind me say, "Hi." And I turn around, and it's Brandon. And I said, "Hey." And we started up this conversation. And he started telling me about a video game that he liked to play called Fallout 4. And I'm not a gamer, but I politely listened to him lay out the gist of the game. The game takes place in the future after a nuclear holocaust. And your goal is to survive. But he's telling me about these weapons and where to find food. And then he says, "You want to know where the first nuclear strike hit in the United States?" And I said, "Okay, sure." He said, "Great. Well, first you need to hear the news report that came out while the strike happened." And he said, "But don't worry. I have the whole intro to the game memorized, word for word." And he did. Voices and sound effects included. Now, as I said, I'm not a gamer. Even often when Ben wants me to come watch one of him play a game, I'm like, I'm just not that interested in him. But Brandon's going on, and he's giving me every little detail, and he's telling me about this one hidden stockpile of guns and where you can find food and where you can go to train. This went on for 3 hours. It only ended when the hike ended. And I still don't know what Fallout 4 is, but I can give you word for word the introduction and tell you how to win. Now, why did I tell you about Brandon? To brag about my own righteousness or to imply that I'm a hero? Absolutely not, for I am not righteous, nor am I a hero. Most of that 3-hour hike, I felt guilty because I really wasn't interested in what he was saying. There were times I really wasn't listening. He's talking, I'm going, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh. At one point, he started telling me about where the secret stash of things were. And then he said, "But I'm not going to go into that with you because it's too much detail." But he added, "I'll save that for later." And I looked up to heaven and I thought, "Oh, God, no. Jesus, help a man, help a man." So a hero? No. I am far from Jesus that day, who does listen and is attentive to every word we say. So why did I do it? I did it because I sensed that this 11-year-old kid just needed someone to talk to. Even more important, he just needed someone to listen to him. He told me that he didn't have friends, and I got the feeling that nobody was interested in what Brandon was interested in or listened to him. Not his scouts and his troop, not his scoutmaster, not his teachers, not his brothers, and maybe not even his parents. In that aspect of that thing, he was invisible. He was lonely. But on that day, for 3 hours, he found someone who would listen. And halfway through the hike, I found myself thinking, will this kid ever shut up? And then God smacked me upside the head, and I understood, okay, Lord, this is the cross that I'm to bear, that I'm supposed to carry today. And I realized it was time to switch from being an assistant scoutmaster to being a pastor, to being a minister. Like Zacchaeus, Brandon's face lit up when he was explaining his game to me. Finally, he thought, someone notices me, someone sees me, someone is willing to spend time with me and listen to me. Friends, my first point today is that there are invisible people all around us. There are people that we just don't see. They're the kind of people who are lonely. They're the kind of people we never celebrate. They're the kid who goes to practice every single day and never gets in the game. It's the woman who works faithfully for a company for 6 years and the boss still doesn't know her name. They're out there. They're around us. And they want us to see them. And we can help them find a place in this world. We can help the world seem bearable. For hundreds of years, the Bantu people of southern Africa have greeted one another with the phrase "Sabona," which means "I see you." It communicates the idea that I respect and acknowledge you for who you are. You have worth. And the response is "Sikhona," which means "I am here," meaning that when you see me, you bring me into existence. Your acknowledgments of me gives me life. I am real. Sabona is part of a bigger philosophy called Ubuntu, which means I am who I am because of who we are. The spirit of Ubuntu reminds us that we are all connected. Native Americans have a similar understanding. Chief Seattle said, "Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect." You see, God never created us to live in isolation, but in community, a community called the body of Christ, where every person has worth, every person is connected and is seen and is recognized. However, the world wants us to believe that we need to be independent and self-sufficient, and somehow that if we need other people, that makes us somehow weak. But friends, nothing could be farther from the truth. Every action we take, every word we speak, has an impact on other people in the world around us. Every person's life is significant and leaves a mark in space and time and affects the whole. Ubuntu is an understanding that at our basic level, we are all made of the same stuff, the same essence. We all have the same origins. Although we may look different and speak different languages and be raised in different cultures, we are all biologically the same. We are all connected. Archbishop Desmond Tutu said, "Ubuntu is the essence of being human. Ubuntu speaks particularly about the fact that you cannot exist as a human being in isolation. It speaks about our interconnectedness. You can't be human all by yourself. And when you have this quality, Ubuntu, you are known for your generosity. We think of ourselves far too frequently as just individuals separated from one another, whereas we are connected. And what you do affects the whole world. When you do well, it spreads out. It is for all of humanity. Friends, the truth is, none of us wins unless we all win. We can only truly become what we want to be when we assure that all people can become what they want to be. We will never truly be free until all people are free. We will never have justice until we assure all people have justice. And we will never fully be accepted until we fully accept all people. Ubuntu is the essence of what Jesus espoused. When he spoke to the bleeding woman, he was saying, "Sabona, I see you." When he healed the man who was blind, he was saying, "Sabona, I see you." When he healed the lame man at the pool of Bethsaida, he was saying, "Sabona, I see you." And when he called Zacchaeus down out of that tree, he was saying, "Sabona, I see you." Ubuntu. And whenever I listened to Brandon's story, I was saying, "Sabona, I see you, little man." This morning, I have this song running through my head that I can't get out, and it's the Beatles song, "Eleanor Rigby." A woman so poor, she gathers the rice that has been left behind after being thrown on the ground at a wedding. She goes home and stares out a window, wearing a face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? Paul McCartney says she's an old, lonely woman who puts on cold cream to look younger. But to look younger for who? For no one noticed her. Like the bleeding woman, she's invisible. No one even came to her funeral. And then there's Father McKenzie. Like Zacchaeus, he was a public figure. He was known, but few in the community came to church. And those who did didn't really come to see him or maybe even hear his sermon. Life of a pastor or priest can be very lonely. And McCartney laments, "All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Where do they come from? They come from the world. They are the product of condemnation, judgment, and isolation, racism, oppression, marginalization. That's what creates lonely people, invisible people. Where do they all belong? In the church. Jesus came for the marginalized. He came to heal people of their sickness and their loneliness and their depression and their peer pressure and everything else. And he has commissioned us. He has sent us to go out to these people, the no name, no fame, ordinary people, and to offer them hope of the gospel. We're to go out and search for them, reach out to them, see them, listen to them, and invite them into the fellowship of believers, the family of God, the body of Christ, which is the church. The church. And we can do that. We can do that. If we turn to God and we just pray, "Give me your eyes for just one second. Lord, give me your eyes so I can see everything that I've been missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Oh, Lord, give me your eyes so I can see." So the first point of my message today is there are invisible people all around us, and we need to ask God to open our eyes to see them as he sees them and engage them and let them know we acknowledge them and that we see their presence and they have worth and they are loved. And we're supposed to listen to them and reach out to them and invite them. The second thing I want to point out is Maybe you're sitting here today, this morning, really taking all of this in, and everything that I have just described has hit a little too close to home. Because the person, that invisible person you're thinking about in your mind, is you. Is you. If so, I have a message for you. Sabona, I see you. And Jesus sees you. And he knows exactly how you feel. Whoa, wait a minute, Pastor. You're talking about Jesus, the one people worship and followed and hang on every word. You're telling me he knows what it feels like to be invisible? Well, yes. Consider what Isaiah said about him. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of sorrows and familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their eyes. He was despised, and we held him in low esteem. While on earth, Jesus was lowly, poor. He owned nothing. And when you think about it, most of his notoriety was due to condemnation, gossip, hatred, shunning. Did Jesus know loneliness and suffering? Absolutely. For the first 30 years of his life, he was invisible to the world he created and gave life to. We're told, although he created the world knew him not. He was invisible to the world. And for the 3 years that the world did see him, they despised and rejected him. Friends, suffering in any form isn't easy, but seems to be somehow made a little more bearable when we talk to someone who has walked the same valleys that we've walked. If you feel invisible to the people around you, it may be tempting to lash out to God and say, why? Why did you make me like this? You say that you knew me before I was born. You say you knit me together in my mother's womb. Then why did you make me this way? Why not the star athlete? Why not a better singer? Why not prettier, smarter, taller, more creative? Just something that someone would notice. Oh, if only you could understand, Lord. But he does. For he has walked the valleys that we have walked. And he says, I see you. I see you in your darkness. I see you in your sickness. I see you in your loneliness. I see you in your poverty. I see you in your grief, your angst, and your despair. Friends, I don't even pretend to understand why God made you the way you are. But I do know this. Each of us has been made in the image of God. We are precious, we are special, and you have purpose. I don't know what your purpose is, but God does. And you are visible. You are visible to those who matter. To those who matter. And what if the person who truly matters is someone who's even more invisible than you are? Your neighbor, the mailman, the girl checking you out at the grocery store, the waitress whose day, year, even life could be changed by you simply saying, I see you. You matter. I think that's part of what we're experiencing as a nation. Groups of people and individuals who feel they have been invisible for far too long, desperately shouting and acting out, saying, we are here. See us. Our lives matter. The world would be so much better if we just ask God to allow us to see the world and the people around us as he sees them. Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Oh Lord, open our eyes that we can see. My friends, choose this day whom you will serve. Amen.